Hello and welcome to episode 299 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I mean, we're here to talk rest season 150. A huge part of this is going to be injuries. And before I introduce my brethren here, all these injuries happened in week 12. Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Darren Waller, DeAndre Swift, Deebo Samuel, Daryl Henderson, Miles Sanders, Jalen Hurts, Pat Freiermuth, JD McKissick, Daniel Jones. And I mean, I think that a lot of this is going to really shape the season. I was looking at some of my best ball teams and I was like, my God, I'm looking good. And now I just lost four of my best players. So this is like carnage like I've never seen. Well, I want to say not like I've never seen before, but high percentile carnage at a really interesting time of the season. Anyways, we're going to get into all that. Mark, you know him. You love him. The people want more of Mark after he gave them four winners on the betting show last week. Mark Dankenbring, how's it going, buddy?
It's going well. I did just place a full fab bid on Jamal Williams to drop Calvin Ridley, so that's how this week's going. But other than that, doing all right.
Good. And Leone, I had a couple questions if Leone was retiring or quitting or something along those lines after yet another Thunderdome win. Confirmed to the people, Leone, that you are contractually obligated to be here for the next 30 years, and no matter how much you win, you can't quit.
30? We might gotta go back and check that contract. I don't know about 30, but for the foreseeable future.
Yep. So Leone off yet another Thunderdome win. I think we got a lot of good feedback on the podcast Leone and I did on Monday, which was just trying to help people, you know, which is kind of the hardest thing to do in DFS, which is play a very, very contrarian style and still win, which is very, very hard. But anyways, go back and listen to that. Okay, let's get into it here. Obviously, what we're doing here today is what would our rankings look like only for the rest of the season, meaning everything else that happened is in the past, week 13 through week 17. What matters? What do the rankings look like? I want to start with some of this injury stuff here. I guess, Leone, we can start with the Panthers thing. Panthers is not a good run out, man. They have a bye, which messes things up in the rankings. And I think they're going to use both Abdullah and Chuba Hubbard going forward. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey's out for the season. And they're getting like bottom two quarterback play, I think, from Cam Newton. I know you guys love Cam Newton more than me. But I don't know. I'm sure a lot of people out there are listening right now. How much should I bid on Chuba and Abdullah, et cetera, et cetera? What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. Like you said, I do think they're going to split them with Abdullah playing the passing down role. Chuba kind of had a shot there when CMC was out before. He had a couple weeks where it was like borderline full workhorse, and it just didn't fully materialize for him. And now I think we're going to see him in this more of a two-down role. So I think obviously both should be on rosters. I'll be putting in a bid on Abdullah. I think there's a chance, you know, maybe this is even a little bit closer than what we have it if you're in a full PPR league, just because the pass catching role we've seen for the Panthers, even when it's not McCaffrey, you know, they do seem to target the running backs quite a bit. And I think that's going to be Abdullah in that spot. As far as how much to bid, those questions are always so difficult because it's like, it depends how much fab you have left, you know, how much your teammates have left, like what's out there. And this is one of the craziest weeks we've had in a long time, at least this close to the playoffs. So right. Yeah, I'm not overly optimistic on it either. I'm actually kind of optimistic on DJ Moore, who, you know, the weeks that Christian McCaffrey was out, I think like half those weeks, he had a target share north of 30%. And there's a chance that he gets back to being really valuable, where the offense isn't that efficient, but if the raw volume is that good, you know, he's just going to make some things happen with Yak and whatnot because he's talented.
Yeah. Okay, the other big injury news is this DeAndre Swift situation. First, they called him day-to-day. Then they were like, well, he's probably not going to play in week 13. And now it comes out today. It looks like DeAndre Swift is going to miss multiple weeks here, Mark. You know, what DeAndre Swift was doing was unique from a role perspective, but I also think it was unique from like a talent perspective. Like, I'm not sure Jamal Williams can do anything close to what DeAndre Swift was doing. Now, I will say this. Jamal Williams plays well in the pass game. Coaches love him. I can see it for Jamal Williams, but man, they're going to get like no red zone opportunities. He's not going to be, you know, receiving for like 90, 80 yards in a game. So what do you think about the Detroit stuff going forward?
Yeah, you're right that the explosiveness with DeAndre Swift is just on a different level than Jamal Williams, but the volume that Williams has gotten I mean, when Swift left this past game was great. You know, he had 15 of the 16 running back carries after Swift left. Saw, you know, a handful of targets as well. As you mentioned, there are just dump downs and he couldn't do much with them, but he's at least getting some catches and that's valuable in PPR. But yeah, you mentioned it. I think the multiple weeks with Swift thing, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they place him on IR or not. Obviously, that would knock him out for 3 weeks. So I'm hoping if they don't do that, then he's out 2 weeks and he can be back by week 15 for the start of the playoffs. You know, in the meantime, I think Jamal is just a clear running back two until he returns. There's really not a whole lot going on in that offense. So you think they're going to continue to load up the running back. You know, Campbell took over the play calling duties there and he's called a ton of rushing plays and they just really don't have much going on. So I think he could get loaded up with volume. You know, hopefully when Swift comes back, he's fully effective and ready for a stretch playoff run because they have Atlanta and Seattle to close out the fantasy season, which are both two great fantasy matchups.
Yeah, I do think that if Jamar Jefferson is healthy, and I haven't seen an update on him, but if Jamar Jefferson is healthy, I think they will use him like, you know, 20, 30%. And maybe they use this Gordon Ikubike guy as well. You know, I don't think it's going to be like 25 touches for Jamal Williams, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
That's what stinks is I like Jamar Jefferson, you know, someone I took late in dynasty leagues that in theory I'd like to stash him, but they really do seem to be splitting that role behind Jamal Williams between Ikubike and Jefferson.
Let's go. Yeah,
Jefferson was active this past week and Jamal ran 15 routes and Godwin Ikubike and Jefferson only combined for five. So 15 okay. to five there on routes this past week.
Okay. I don't know if there's much we need to say about the Madison and Dalvin situation. In fact, let's just skip that. It's so obvious. I mean, anytime Dalvin is out, Madison is just going to absolutely wreck. And you'll see that in our DFS projections when they come out later tonight that, I mean, my God, Alexander Madison against the Lions is going to project like an absolute smash. DraftKings did get him up to 7,600. I saw, but he's still going to, I think, project pretty well here. Let's move on to something more interesting, though. This Eli Mitchell situation. Leone took the L. I mean, Leone hasn't been taking many L's lately, but Leone took the L in Slack after much banter and hostility. Leone was proven wrong as Eli Mitchell just went absolutely nuke. What do you think about him going forward? And you can feel free to apologize here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Taylor. When the CEO speaks, you listen. And he saw the Elijah Mitchell love in Kyle Shanahan's eyes. And I didn't see it that way. I thought it was pretty nuts because, you know, there between the hand thing, you know, we were joking on Tilt Space. The talk of the week was like, he'd be wearing a club on his hand or something. And even prior, like Jamichael Hasty before he got hurt was playing the pass down role. And then this week, all Elijah Mitchell, we get Debo hurt, who is taking, you know, siphoning off a few carries, but not that much. And, you know, if Jimmy G is going to play as capable as he's played the last handful of weeks and talk about taking L's, oh my goodness, all my Trey Lance shares. Whew. But yeah, if Jimmy G is going to play that well, this is an offensive run game that we know with Shanahan super efficient. It just kind of like a little bit depend on the overall offense. And with Jimmy G operating at an efficient level, the scoring opportunities are going to be there. I'm really high on Elijah Mitchell the rest of the way. I don't think he's going to have a huge pass catching role, but just the fact that they're willing to use him at all in that role matters, right? Like just getting three catches a game, you know, that's an additional five fantasy points. Like that's a pretty big deal when you're starting with a touchdown versus some of these guys, you know, who are like, you know, over under one catch per game.
My take on Eli Mitchell was that Kyle Shanahan clearly loves him as the base back. And like, right. You know, that was obvious. I was shocked that he got six targets in the game. I mean, absolutely floored. I never would have thought that in a million years. Like we were looking at betting like under 8.5 receiving yards or something like that. And I actually thought that was okay. I think we tried to bet, put it in. We got front run and we actually ended up not getting it. So we were running good there. And then also with the Debo thing, I mean, yeah, you know, Debo was, you could project Debo for like 4, 5, 6 carries a game. And now like, I'm not sure they're going to do that with Ayuk, you know, so I think you can give Eli Mitchell even more of a base projection.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to ask Mark, but like, talk about Debo specifically. Some people in the chat are talking about like if stuff's updated, and it's difficult to drop some of these guys that are out a couple weeks too much because the player pool at this point in the year, I mean, you get outside the top 50, 60 guys, there's a significant drop off in upside, which as a result, kind of leans us being maybe more optimistic on Dalvin Cook DeAndre Swift, Deebo Samuel, even AJ Brown to an extent, these guys that could come back and make a difference in the playoffs. There's also a chance they don't come back at all, you know, this late in the season. So it's tough, but there's just not a ton of upside in the player pool right now.
Sure. And obviously, like, we're weighting the rankings towards the playoffs, right? So, like, you want to still hold Deebo for the playoffs, obviously, and you see him there at 20th overall, still Eli Mitchell at 42nd overall. The Leonard Fournette thing, man, I talked to Evan a little bit about it yesterday. If Gio Bernard's only going to play one snap in a game they're trailing and Lenny's going to run 31 routes on 37 Tom Brady dropbacks, I mean, my God, because you can see what happens. If they get close, Lenny can fall into some touchdowns and he can also catch 4, 5, 6 balls in a game. I mean, Tom Brady's throw rate at running back historically is really high. And so even on base downs, he's throwing to the running back position a lot. So yeah, I mean, Leonard Fournette to me is, and I hate to like jump on a guy after you scored 4 touchdowns or whatever, but just the usage for it is, I mean, it's exceptional. So talk about how we ranked Lenny here. We have him 15th overall now, Mark, which seems, people are going to say that's very, very high for a guy that was literally cut by one team and almost cut by another team, the Bucks, just last year.
Yeah, I actually continued to bump him up. We had him a little bit lower, and just looking at it beforehand, I bumped him up about 10 more spots because the usage has just been outstanding. He leads all running backs not named Christian McCaffrey in target share over the last 4 games. He's up close to 18%, which is massive. He has at least 5 targets in 7 of the last 8 games, which again is just, you know, an amazing number for a running back. The offensive environment in Tampa Bay is great. Obviously, they're, you know, one of the favorites every week to score the most points, kind of thing. He's top 5 and inside the 5 carries, 3rd in carries inside the 10. So it's just, you know, the high value touches are there. The scoring is going to be there with Tampa Bay. So it's really hard not to love Leonard Fournette down the stretch.
Yeah, totally agree. I think a fuzzy situation is AJ Dillon versus Aaron Jones. And I mean, I understand Aaron Jones was hurt. The way AJ Dillon has played, like, they have to be an even timeshare. Like, AJ Dillon's just been so, so, so good. And so it's really hard to rank this stuff. They also have a bye this week, so they're going to be dropped down further versus teams who already had their bye. But yeah, I don't really have a great read on him. We have Aaron Jones 32nd and AJ Dillon 72nd right now. I might be on an island here. I think that it could be even closer going forward down the stretch here. Leone, what do you think about this whole Packers RB mess?
Yeah, I could see it's being squeezed a little bit. I think our edge towards Aaron Jones is just historically, you know, like AJ Dillon, I don't think scored a touchdown before Aaron Jones got hurt, which is crazy. And obviously he can score from outside the red zone, but even though Dillon's a bigger back, they seem to prefer Aaron Jones in the red zone. So that, and we're going to have a better pass catching role for Aaron Jones. So the high value touches we think will be a little bit more in Jones's favor is essentially the reason for that gap. And it probably, you know, could be squeezed a little bit tighter, but more catches, more red zone touches is our prediction there. I think both are incredibly high upside though. I think you could see some really big weeks from either back the rest of the way once they get through their bye here.
Cordarrelle Patterson, I hate to say bad things about Cordarrelle Patterson, man, you know, because he's just like such a freak on efficiency. And I think like some of this efficiency has to be built into baselines at some point, right? Like he's just like one of the most efficient players in the entire league. My concern this past week was, maybe it was weird because they were winning, but he wasn't really the pass down back and he wasn't really a wide receiver. He was like a base running back. And I get that, you know, that's a one game sample and they were winning a game. They're not often winning and yada, yada, yada. I get all that. It just gives me some pause that maybe they think that he's going to be a base back and they'll use Gallman or Mike Davis or whoever in a third down back. Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me, but that's what it looked like last week. What do you think about CPAT going forward, Mark? And my God, I don't know if you guys are aware that Hermsmeyer redacted Kyle Pitts, and I ripped Hermsmeyer for redacting Kyle Pitts, and then Kyle Pitts did yet nothing yet again, vindicating Hermsmeyer. So anyways, go ahead on Atlanta, Mark.
Yeah, the data bears it out a little bit on Cordero, what you were saying about him becoming more of a base back. In weeks 4 through 8, he lined up Slaughter out wide 10 plus times every week. And then the last 3 games, he's been under 10 in each of those 3. He did leave one early due to injury. So, you know, it's kind of two full games that he's been under 10 routes Slaughter out wide, but clearly taking more of the base rushing work. And Mike Davis ran one more route than him this past week. So we could kind of see it lean in that direction. But just looking at Atlanta, I mean, overall, the offensive environment is pretty bad. They've been under 60 plays in each of their last 5 games, which is not what we want for fantasy. But Cordero does lead the team in rush share and he's 3rd in target share. So they're clearly, you know, scheming him touches whenever he's out there. You know, the touchdown regression, I'm not sure if it's going to come. His explosive plays have been great. And, you know, we would like oftentimes see regression there, but he's just been so good. I think you got to ride it. The other tough thing is they have a really tough schedule upcoming. They get Tampa Bay, Carolina, San Francisco. They do get Detroit for a week, but then are at Buffalo as well. So it's a pretty tough end stretch to their schedule as well.
Let's go to the 10 end position before we get out of here, Leone, because I mean, you know, if you spent a pick on Kelsey, like in the first round, you're probably not doing that well. I suspect if you spent a pick on Kittle, you're probably not doing that well. If you spent a high pick on Waller, you're in trouble now. He has an injury. If you spent a high pick on Kyle Pitts, he's obviously been dusted. So like, I hate to say that late round tight end was right, because all the late round tight ends are kind of dusty and terrible also, but it's just like, no, everybody's horrible. This is always my point in DFS. Everybody's horrible. Let's just spend as little as possible. And so if you got on the Freiermuth stuff or the Schultz stuff or, you know, Gesicki and stuff like that, I feel like you're in a better spot. There's also been a lot of movement here. We have Ebron out, which has obviously helped Freiermuth. Freiermuth is now in the concussion protocol. I mean, this whole tight end thing is kind of a mess here, Leone. Logan Thomas is back. Do you have any takes for the people on maybe just overarching strategy too, looking back what we did at tight end in draft season and where we're at now?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, if I'm looking back at my best ball teams, as bad as some of these tight ends have been, because the position overall is so brutal, you know, it really hasn't hurt me that much, you know, to be invested. I mean, obviously, if you took Kittle, like that was a big problem. You missed some games to injury, but like Kelsey's been good enough. And you're also in a spot, you know, come playoff time, where he still has the ability to separate and over some of these tight ends where they don't. But I think that the big lesson, as usual, Adam, is to try not to take too early the tight ends kind of like after that first tier, you know, because we've got Dalton Schultz in there. We've got Gronk, who was like a later round tight end. Like all those guys, if in between like the seventh and ninth round, it's just kind of not worth it. You know, you can take guys to the 10th to 13th round that have just to get a shot at being up there, you know, Dalton Schultz being another one. So that's sort of my biggest takeaway, is to continue like after that Andrews Hockenson tier. Like,
yeah,
it's just not worth taking a tight end that early. I guess the big one this year would have been Fant, was kind of the guy going in there. And I did take him in some spots, but we said Evan Ingram, it was 2 years ago. Like, it's just, we talk about the RB dead zone. I think like the tight end dead zone is rounds seven through nine.
Well, I took Higbee in that zone a lot, and that's obviously not gone well either, you know? So yeah.
Yeah. And I was big on Higbee too, but it's one of those things with cost. Like, you, if you can get your preferred tight end of choice, like end around nine, like 10, that's great. But if you start reaching in seven and eight, it just, yeah, we got to look at the base rate, and the base rate says these tight ends, you know, there's just not a huge amount of differentiation.
And there's so much that's tied up in touchdowns. And that's the point I wanted to make with these injuries. So you have Freiermuth, who hopefully he keeps playing, but he's such a touchdown machine. Dan Arnold is out for the year, and so James O'Shaughnessy is going to be an option going forward. And then as long as Darren Waller's out, I mean, Foster Moreau is a good player in a good role, playing in a position which Derek Carr really, really likes to target. We'll talk about all these guys in DFS for this week, because they're all going to be in play in that cheap range. But yeah, you know, like, obviously, if you make it to the playoffs, if you made it to the playoffs with Kelsey or Kittle or whatever, and I have James O'Shaughnessy, like, I'm in big trouble, obviously. But like, I guess my point is more like, did you make it to the playoffs with Kelsey, right, and Kittle and Waller, you know?
I think it's a strange year in that, like, the only tight end to beat ADP has been Gronk, really, right? Because,
I mean,
you know,
Andrews
Schultz
has been.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andrews has been solid, really, but, good, you know, he was drafted in, like, the fourth or fifth round. It's not like he has really delivered, like, third round value. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Schultz and Freiermuth have been.
He was, like, the sixth round. Yeah. I got pushed back on the Andrews. He was, like, I was getting him in the sixth pretty frequently.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then, yeah, he has beat that. But I just think it's unusual. You know, Schultz and Freiermuth weren't really drafted too much this year. And I did want to bring up something about Freiermuth I thought was interesting. He's third in the NFL in targets inside the 10-yard line, which just seems crazy. I mean, I feel like, you know, he just hasn't played all that much this year. So, I mean, he is a TD scorer, as Levitan continues to mention.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Born to score touchdowns.
Right. I said to Evan yesterday that Mike Evans and Pat Freiermuth actually have the same mother, because they were both put on this earth to score touchdowns. Last thing before we get out of here, Leone, we need to talk about Washington, because we were so high, or I guess we were in line with market. I mean, but I was optimistic on Antonio Gibson. I preferred Najee Harris in that like late second round range, but I know a lot of other people preferred Antonio Gibson. The way it's run out now could not have run out for Antonio Gibson any better because he got healthy at the same time J.D. McKissic got hurt. I don't know if J.D. McKissic is going to miss time or what, but he has a neck injury. If J.D. McKissic misses, I mean, my God, total wheels up. Just the fact that they're willing to give him 36 touches as they did the other night, I mean, it's crazy. So I know you've been an Antonio Gibson guy. How excited are you now to have Antonio Gibson for this playoff run?
I'm excited, but he got steamed so much in the offseason that when we were touting him, he was going at the 2-3 turn, and then he was going at like the 1-2 turn by the end of the offseason, and I actually didn't get a whole ton. But I do think he exemplifies how we're trying to think in range of outcomes, right? And we kind of have seen throughout the season the two different ways it could go, right? Like he gets banged up a little bit. J.D. McKissic still has a third down back, and he's like this two down back that, you know, just doesn't have a whole ton of value. Like it's just a dime or dozen two down back. And then all of a sudden you fast forward, he's healthier, he's being a little bit more efficient, and now we're potentially adding in a ton of pass work, and he could be a league winner in the playoffs. So, you know, there's many ways that a season can play out. Like it's not a foregone conclusion. And I think, yeah, we could have an entire episode of kind of like relooking at the running back landscape in general, you know, talking about like Leonard Fournette versus Ronald Jones and different things like that. But, you know, just an important reminder to try and think of ranges of outcomes when you're drafting and just being understanding when we go into next year that some of the things that happened were not foregone conclusions.
All right. Anybody else you guys feel strongly about we should mention on here?
I'm just want to mention Seattle's play calling just being the nut low. They've run 45 and 49 plays the last two games. They only have two games all year where they've run 60 or more plays. And one of them was right at 60. And just so you, like on a DFS week, generally the lowest we'll project a team is maybe 59 to 60 plays. Like the absolute one out of the 32 teams will project that low on a week. And Seattle has consistently not only not hit that mark, but coming well below it. It's nuts. And I just can't believe we're at a point where Russ is back and healthy and DK Metcalf is, you know, tough to start. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Yes. The going to hell narrative is in full effect. We'll talk about that on Friday as well. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the rest of season top 150 context. Be sure you're following Mark on Twitter. Actually, Mark, give the people your Twitter so that they know.
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter at Mark Dank.
Yes, at Mark Dank, just how it sounds. You know, at Two Hats, One Mike, the richest man on earth. I am Adam Levitan. For Jerry, Mike, Mark, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.